Blog Talk Radio.
Well, okay, I guess we're not getting introduction music here. I'm not sure what happened there, but welcome everybody to another episode of Inside the Octagon. I am one of your hosts, Kalani Lewis, along with my co-host, Leo Shower. Leo, what's up, my man?
Hey, what's happening? Big news this week.
Man, oh man, it is big news. Before we get to that and start the show, Inside the Octagon comes to you guys weekly every Wednesday, late afternoon, I guess, early evening, 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Be sure to check it out. You can follow me on Twitter at KLew11. You can follow Leo on Twitter at
Shower Leo.
There you go. And now, you know what? Let's jump right into it. Big news. Big money news coming out. Mayweather and McGregor. It is official. It is on August 26th right here in Viva Las Vegas. What are your thoughts initially on hearing the best in boxing taking on the best in MMA?
Sign me up for the greatest press conference of all time, baby. This is going to be absolutely wild. I cannot wait. A little bit of a, you know, we're only getting about a month and a half of notice, or 2 months maybe, but I fully trust Showtime and UFC to, you know, fully promote this fight. It's going to be wild. It's going to be really fun and entertaining. We'll see how the fight goes. And hey, it's an interesting day. It's August 26th, just a couple weeks before Triple G and Canelo. We'll see how, if any fight fans really decide to skip one or the other, because, you know, we're probably going to be shelling out a lot of money for Mayweather and McGregor.
Oh, that we will indeed. You remember when there was another big fight with Mayweather about 2 years ago? It was $100 for the pay-per-view. Good gosh. But I can almost guarantee that this fight is going to be more entertaining than we had Maypac. And like you said, the press conferences, the build-up, the weigh-ins, it is going to be a madhouse. The money team down here in Vegas, all the fans that come with that, the Irish have sown consistently. They will follow McGregor wherever he goes. Remember at UFC, I want to say 79, where it was supposed to be Jones, DC, one, but they had to pull out of that one. But McGregor was still on the card when he fought Dustin Poirier. That was a madhouse there at the weigh-ins, if you remember, because we were there live. So they were in strong numbers there as well. So it is going to be an absolute circus down here. I don't know if there's enough security in Vegas yet to go down. And maybe me and you need to get our license and get on down there and see if we could be some extra security handlers. You bring up an interesting point. Well, you know, Mayweather is a couple of days. Mayweather-McGregor is a couple of days before my own birthday. But it is 2 weeks before the big fight that everyone thought was a super fight of the year, Canelo versus Triple G. Do you think it's going to affect – do you think that was a business tactic on Mayweather Promotions, given how De La Hoya and Golden Boy Promotions has kind of slighted him for the majority of his career? Do you think that was a business move on his end to say, – I'm going in front of him so I could try to take away some of his revenue that he could have potentially earned?
Well, it became very public knowledge that the UFC and Showtime were gunning for that September 16th date that,
Mayweather?
No, that Golden Boy Promotions got for the day for their fight. So if they can't get that, then might as well get it a couple weeks before and try to get, you know, some of those fans that are crossover fans that are going to buy one or the other, probably both. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense for them to go, you know, ahead of Golden Boy Promotions. So, hey, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, and we'll see which one of these two fights sells more.
Well, I want to say, I can almost think this fight right here is going to sell more. Now, granted, it's only 2 months of promotion that they could do. It's not like they got 6 months or a year. But if you think about it, that's only official promotion. This fight has been hyped up for about a year and a half now, where they've been going back and forth. They've been joining each other through social media and other media outlets. So there is some buildup already there between the two. And now, you know, Floyd said he's only coming out of retirement for this one fight. It's a one-off, nothing else. Let me ask you this. Floyd right now is 49-0. Most likely he's going to win. He'll be 50-0. But his 50th win would be against an MMA fighter with no boxing background whatsoever. He's a stand-up guy in MMA, got it, but no official boxing background whatsoever. Do you think people will respect him being 50-0, or will they always look at it as 49-0 with an asterisk on that 50?
No, I mean, at the end of the day, McGregor's a very credible fighter, and like you said, he's a stand-up fighter. This is going to be, not the most legitimate boxing 50-0 record, but a lot of these guys pad their records anyway. I mean, that's just a common thing in boxing. And it's a little bit weirder to see a 49-0 guy taking on an amateur boxer, you know, towards the end of his career. But I don't see why they would put an asterisk on a fight where he's fighting a legitimate fighter, a stand-up fighter at that. So I don't see any kind of asterisk being put on Mayweather's record after this fight.
I agree with you. McGregor is a legit opponent, but you also got to look at it too. He's never stepped in a boxing ring. And even though it's a combat sport, mixed martial arts, it is a completely different sport than in boxing. Different technique, different style. And, people don't give Mayweather his credit already for being 49-0. Oh, he selected opponents. He picked guys out when they were old and past their primes or too young in their career, Canelo and Victor Ortiz. So, you know, we're already finding ways to nitpick at him already. But I do have to say, he's 40 years old. It'll be, when they fight August 26th, it will be just shy of a full 2 years since Mayweather's been in the ring. Excuse me. 40-0. 2 years removed from boxing, and he's taking on a guy who's younger, bigger, more powerful. We've heard that story before, but not at 40 years old. Eventually, Father Time has to find his way to Floyd Mayweather, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. Floyd Mayweather is a defensive tactician. He's really taken very little damage in his career. And when we saw the first fight against Maidana caught him, you know, once or twice in that fight. And so Mayweather wanted to run it back. He had completely read Maidana, and by the second time, he just made him look like an amateur. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, a fish in water in the boxing ring. So I don't see Floyd Mayweather really slowing down. We haven't seen any signs of him slowing down in his last few fights. So I fully expect to see the same Mayweather that we've seen in the ring for all these years.
I was watching a video where McGregor and his coach were saying, especially his coach, John Kavanaugh, was saying that when they were looking at the Mayweather and Pacquiao fight, because Pacquiao's a southpaw guy, even though Pacquiao couldn't pull the trigger as often as many people would have hoped, they did see some holes that with McGregor's power, and then obviously not having the air quotes shoulder injury, that if he can land those straight lefts on Mayweather, Mayweather might have some problems. He has had trouble with southpaws in the past. They do everything backwards. And McGregor being a tremendous puncher. Now, they're going to be wearing 10-ounce gloves. Not that big. Only 6 ounces more than what McGregor is used to punching with. So it's going to be interesting to see, can McGregor's power translate to boxing, and can it catch Floyd Mayweather? Because one thing Mayweather always has over everyone, reaction and speed and quickness. And then now, Judah was probably the only guy that I saw that could match him with speed. But once, as you said, once Mayweather was able to read him like he did with Maidana, he figured him out and said, okay, 4 or 5 rounds, I got you now, and it was over. So it's going to be interesting to see at 40 years old, 2 years off, Father Time eventually has to catch up to this guy. Is McGregor, how crazy would it be if McGregor was the one, 49-1?
It would be absolutely bonkers. I mean, how do you not sell a second fight after that? I mean, I really have a hard time believing that the loser of this fight, if they don't look too good, then they're not going to be asking for some kind of a rematch. But yeah, there's always something to be said about McGregor's power. I mean, he's put down so many guys in the featherweight and lightweight divisions in the UFC with that, you know, that powerful left hand. That's no joke. I mean, he can put anybody down with that. The question is, can he really catch Mayweather? Can he out footwork Mayweather? He's not going to really do that, but can he catch him in a corner or something? But you know, he can always put anybody out. I just don't see Mayweather really slowing down at this point.
I don't either, and that's one reason why I do appreciate, and I'm very excited that the fight is happening this summer. But I almost kind of wish that the fight took place next year. And I know it won't make a difference. I'm not saying that, but it would have just given McGregor that much more time to work on the simple things, cutting off the ring, trapping him against the ropes or the corner, working those kind of things. Of course, as he could train for the next 15 years, he won't catch up to Mayweather. Got that. But at least work on some of the basic fundamentals to sharpen your tools just a little bit more. Because like we said, with that powerful left hand that he's got, the height and the reach and his just overall willingness to get in there and engage, You add that with him practicing his game plan, executing, cutting off a fighter like Mayweather, who is very defensive and a counterpuncher, it just will give him that much more an advantage. Now, it's not going to bring him close to winning, I don't think, but you never know. Here's my question. Outside of getting a win, because that's the ultimate goal here, for McGregor, what would be the ultimate moral victory? Would it be lasting 12 rounds with Mayweather, knocking Mayweather down, stunning Mayweather maybe tagging with a left, and we clearly see that Mayweather's hurt? What would be the ultimate moral, or anything else you could think of, what would be the ultimate moral victory for McGregor in this bout?
Yeah, there's certainly something to be said about all those things. I mean, a knockdown would be absolutely the ultimate. I would like to see whether McGregor would be the bullish fighter in there, whether he would want to back up Floyd Mayweather. I mean, we can see Floyd Mayweather backing up and counterpunching his whole career. I wonder if McGregor was the type of guy who was going to go in there and try to impose his game plan in really a foreign sport for him, you know? So, yeah, I'd love to see if McGregor can try to impose his size and try to maybe dirty box a little bit and see what he can get away with and try to put Floyd Mayweather up against the ropes. That, to me, is the most interesting part of this fight is, will McGregor go out there and try to put it on Mayweather?
What I find to be interesting as well would be McGregor's conditioning. We've seen him at times, you know, kind of gas a little bit. Granted, he doesn't fight many five-round fights, but it's also a different sport where you're not having a guy clinch you up against the cage and just hold you there, or you don't have to worry about the takedowns or kicks or anything like that. So, and we know Mayweather, he doesn't like to come at you. He doesn't have to push the pace. He rather circle around, counter, let you come in, and he counters off your mistakes. So for McGregor, as long as he's not out there trying to load up on every single shot, he might do fairly well in this. I am curious to see how his conditioning will look as the fight goes on. If he can make it past, let's say, the sixth or seventh round, how his conditioning looks, is he going to be huffing and puffing from the mouth? Is he going to be slowing down? Is he going to be hands down? So I'm very curious to see how he goes about that.
Not only that, you know, the last couple of fights that we've seen out of McGregor at 145, I mean, he had to cut down so much weight and he looked so sucked in. Is that something that Mayweather is going to try to do? Is he going to try to make him cut down to 147? Is this going to be a 152?
No, this is going to be a 154. They said it's going to be a 154. So it actually benefits McGregor as far as not having to cut.
Yeah, that's actually great then. You know, that's a more natural weight class for Conor McGregor. So then a weight cut probably shouldn't be an issue. But yeah, like you said, we have seen McGregor gas in a few of his fights. And a lot of these guys are saying, you know, for the first 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, McGregor's a nightmare. What happens after that? And then that's when Floyd Mayweather really likes to take you into those deep waters and try to basically outwork you and outbox you.
Yeah, that's that's Mayweather's game plan in a lot of his fights, is survive the first four rounds. That way he's already read you, he sees how you want to come at him, and then he's able to adjust right there on the fly. He's one of the smartest fighters to ever step in the ring. Obviously, as the fight gets closer, we're going to be talking more and more about this. This is the big breaking news, though, with Mayweather and McGregor being announced that it's official today, August 26th. The Mayweather fans, the McGregor fans, boxing versus MMA. What I like about this, unlike Randy Couture versus James Toney, we knew what to expect from that. Now, had that been James Toney versus Chuck Liddell versus Quinn Rampage Jackson, it would have been more of a toss-up because those guys, even though they both have wrestling backgrounds, they're stand-up strikers. We knew Randy was going to come in, double-leg him, single-leg him, whatever, take him down and just grind and pound him from there. This one, oh, it's all stand-up, baby. It's all stand-up. Here's one last question I want to throw in on this, and of course, we'll talk more about this fight as the weeks go on, but is there any chance, and I mean any chance, that Mayweather may decide that if, hey, you know what? I'll run it back in the UFC cage with you, but with specific rules. You know, maybe we can't go to the ground, you know, or something like that. Maybe just to give that aspect. Do you see that ever happen? Or is Mayweather like, no, we're only boxing and that's it? No going to the octagon, no UFC gloves, none of that. We are strictly going to stay boxing.
I think it'll be a cold day in hell before you get Mayweather outside of a ring. But, I mean, there's a dollar sign to everything, right? I mean, if the money's there, Mayweather's probably game for just about anything. I don't really see Mayweather stepping out of a ring to try to entertain any kind of possibility where he could possibly get embarrassed or look stupid. So especially against a guy like McGregor, who's just going to completely feed off of that and then probably just shoot to the stars and say, I'm the guy who beat the guy, you know? So I don't really see Mayweather kind of, you know, borrowing his name and his legacy to do anything like that. Unless, of course, there's several zeros after that dollar sign.
And several more. This is like Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania 30. Seriously, the streak, the undefeated streak, the phenom, the legend, the icon, taking on the beast, the one who just might be able to do it. Too bad we don't got Paul Heyman doing hype for this fight. But McGregor and Mayweather are two of the best trash talkers out there, so it will be fun and entertaining going forward. I can't wait as it gets closer. Now, talking about getting closer, this weekend we got UFC Fight Night in Singapore between the main event Holly Holm versus Betch Cohera. If you would, Leo, give us a breakdown on how you see this fight coming about and how it may play out.
Well, here's Holly Holm. You know, she's coming off like three straight losses. I mean, this is a do or die for her. And, you know, she's fighting against Betch Cohera. She's a very, very powerful fighter, you know, kind of a slow fighter, in my opinion. And Holly Holm, I believe, is going to try to exploit that. And, you know, she's going to try to use her footwork and, you know, basically just try to outpick Betch Cohera in this fight. So it's going to be a really interesting fight. I'm fully picking Holly Holm to, you know, dominate and impose her game plan. And, you know, it's definitely going to be probably a number one contender for this bantamweight title fight. So, yeah, I'm certainly interested in seeing what Holly Holm can do. I mean, like I said, this is probably a do or die for her, and she definitely doesn't want to see a fourth loss in a row in her record. So, yeah, and then in the co-main event, we're going to be seeing Andrei Arlovski against Marcin Tybura. Andrei Arlovski also, you know, probably a do or die for him as well. He's coming off three straight losses against Marcin Tybura, who's, you know, becoming a name in the heavyweight division. You know, we definitely don't want to see Andrei Arlovski lose a fourth one in a row. I think whether or not he makes it in there, he's probably, you know, done after this. So he probably just wants to retire with one more victory in his career.
Sorry about that. I had some pressing needs I had to attend to real quick. Holly Holm, Cohera. Question would be, does a loser get their walking papers from the UFC? Holly Holm's a former champion, one of the best female boxers that we've had, not only in boxing, but especially in the sport of MMA. Former champion, she's the one that dethroned the queen, Ronda Rousey, but she is on a three-fight losing streak. You could make the argument that those three fights, even though she lost, they weren't as bad as it may look if you're just looking at a record. Most likely, her fight with Miesha Tate, either she would have won by split decision or would have went to a draw. But Miesha gets a hold of her, chokes her out. Her loss to Valentina Shevchenko, very good matchup. And honestly, I just think Shevchenko's actual striking skills kind of caught her off guard as opposed to how good she was standing up. I think Holly Holm was like, wow, I didn't realize she was this damn good. And then her loss to Jermaine Duranemi, you could say close fight, maybe it should have been a draw. If Duranemi got a point taken away for the two after bell shots, then it would have went to Holly Holm by decision. So it's not like she's getting blown out the water here in her losses, but it still is three in a row. And if she lost four, very hard to convince people to keep four, although because Holly Holm is in a division and a former champion, I seriously doubt their cutter. Betch Cohera, as good as she is, her win-loss record is not as good, especially against elite talent. Before she fought Ronda Rousey for the title, ultimately, obviously, she lost. She did her wins in the UFC, all of her opponents had zero wins in the UFC. So it's not like she's out there beating the best. Her last victory, I believe, was against Jessica Eye, who I'm a big fan of Jessica Eye. Hey, now. But, you know, Jessica Eye doesn't have a good record in the UFC as well. But she is saying that she liked to fight at 125 so that she can actually get to her natural weight class. With these two women here, the UFC obviously needs female fighters. But, you know, business is business. Do you see the UFC parting ways with either one of these fights? I mean, with the loser of this fight, or do they continue to stay with the promotion?
I don't think the UFC is going to be letting go of Holly Holm because, like you said, she's a woman who built her name off beating Ronda Rousey. And, you know, whether UFC to cut her, there's always Bellator out there, and Bellator can, you know, try to build off of that and make money. So I don't really see the UFC cutting Holly Holm. You know, she's probably – I think they're giving her every chance that they can to see if she can really bounce back and try to, you know, build her name again. So to me, this is a really good you know, build me fight for Holly Holm and see if she can prove that she could still hang in the UFC. As far as Betch Kohei, I don't really see them cutting her either. She's kind of a journeyman fighter, but, you know, she's always a threat to anybody out there. She's very powerful. And, you know, I fully expect Holly Holm to, you know, just get the train back rolling. And like you said, she's only lost to their champions, or in Shevchenko's case, she's going to be fighting for the title soon anyway. So, you know, all very, very credible fighters that she's lost to. So I don't really see anybody leaving the promotion, win, lose, or draw.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It will be, I keep using the word interesting. I got to expand my vocabulary a little bit there, but to see how this plays out for both is going to be something to pay attention to. For the fight itself, obviously we know Holly Holm likes to keep a stand in 1-2 kick, 1-2 kick. Beth, she likes to kind of come forward and bulldoze you. What do you think? Do you think this might be a Holm Rousey reincarnated, where she utilizes her footwork, her countering, her in and out to keep Beth obey, or can Beth actually close the distance, get inside, and do some damage on Holly Holm?
Well, this is kind of tailor-made for Holly Holm because, she, like we said, she's a counter fighter, and she really likes you to, you know, kind of open up and see if she can find some openings and try to, you know, pick you apart. And Betch Kohei is kind of a, like you said, she's a bull rusher, and I think she's going to be looking to put Holly against the cage, try to get some double unders and a takedown, and probably, you know, try to finish her on the ground. But I think Holly Holm is just too quick. Her footwork is really advanced, and she's going to try to pick a Kohei apart at distance. So I fully see Holly Holm just taking full reign of this fight and probably going for a TKO victory, you know, early in the fight.
Yeah, I see Holly Holm walking away with this one kind of with ease. Of course, in a UFC, one punch can change everything, and Beth certainly has the power to do so, but I just don't see her being coordinated enough to do it. And that's not to knock her, but when you're taking on someone who is as technically sound as Holly Holm, your game really has to be on par, as we saw with Miesha Tate, as we saw with Jermaine Durandamy, as we saw with Valentina Shevchenko. I don't see Beth being in that class of level fighters. Now, because she's not, and because she is a bit of a wild card, that might actually benefit her a little bit, to where it gets Holly Holm to maybe be a little overconfident, maybe expose herself just a little too much, maybe feel like, hey, you know what? I can beat this girl anywhere. Let me try to do this. And then Beth could possibly utilize her power on the inside. So it is going to be something to pay attention to on how this match right here plays out. Arlovsky taking on Marcin. How you say that?
I think it's Marcin Tybura.
Marcin. Arlovsky, I mean, the ageless wonder here. At one point in time in the mid-2000s, scariest heavyweight in the world. Now, you know, he's kind of in the middle of that heavyweight division. Not quite a heavyweight title contender, but he's not at the bottom of that top 10 list just yet. Marcin, a young opponent stepping up here, 31 years old. He's 15-2. 7 knockouts, 6 submissions. So he is a finisher, and he is riding a 2-fight win streak in the UFC. He's 2-1 in a promotion so far. I mean, for Arlovsky, how many more fights can this guy still have?
Well, like I was trying to allude to earlier, I think it might be the last fight in Andrei Arlovsky's career. I mean, he's on a 3-4 fight skid, and, you know, his last fight against Francis Ngannou is a fight that they're just trying to build other people's names off of his name. So I just think Arlovsky, you know, might be at the tail end of his career, and he might just want to go with a victory. So I don't think he wants Marcin Tybura to try to build his name off of him either. So, you know, his first 3 losses in his skid, you know, all very credible opponents, all champions or former champions. But then when you lose to Francis Ngannou, and then they try to put you up against Marcin Tybura and try to build his name, it's really not a good look for Andrei Arlovsky. So win, lose, or draw, I'd kind of like to see Andre kind of hang him up, and hopefully, you know, he can retire with a victory. But I don't really like his chances anymore.
Well, no, you're absolutely right in that three of his first four losses on his skid were against very credible opponents. But his loss to Francis Ngannou, say what you want, that dude is top four, top five, and he's the one of the young, hot prospects to pay attention to. Possible future title contender, maybe at the end of this year or early next year. We'll see how the heavyweight picture plays out. For Orlovsky, you know, we've seen this from him before in his Strikeforce run. We've seen him go on 3-4, 5-5 losing streaks and then be able to bounce back and show that, you know what, he still has something left. He does have that suspect jaw, 38 years old. Again, just like with Mayweather, Father Time eventually is going to come for you. But we have seen him go on losing streaks before and be able to bounce back it, going in other promotions, kind of redefining himself, refining his motivation, and then coming back. What I'm curious about is if he loses via, let's say, stoppage, does or if he just loses, period, does he try to do maybe a Vitor Belfort and say, no, I still got fights left in me? Because we know the UFC needs heavyweights, and they love names in the heavyweight division. Can you see the UFC, if Andre wants to continue, on a loss, 5-5 losing streak, do you see the UFC sticking with him, or does he get his walking papers and maybe he starts looking at Bellator, ONE FC, World Series of Fighting, Ryzen? Do you see that happening, or is he going to be kind of like Vitor? The UFC is never going to let him go.
I think the UFC is definitely going to try to encourage him to just kind of call it and maybe put a BJ Penn type situation to him. You know, like, we're not really going to sign you, but we're not going to let you go either. So I think they got to tread carefully to see, you know, what guys they let go to other promotions and compete against them. But I'd really tread carefully if I was a UFC and try to keep putting Andre Arlovsky in fights, especially if he's getting knocked out the way he's been knocked out before in his career. So, yeah, I could see Andre Arlovsky probably wanting to keep his career going, especially somewhere else outside of the UFC. I mean, there's a fatal rematch out there for him. There's probably a... You know, there's several guys out there in Bellator and Ryzen that he could match up against. Like I said, I'd really like to just kind of see him hang it up and walk away with as many brain cells as possible.
I want to touch on something that you just brought up. You said, you know, the UFC's got to be careful, keep putting Orlovsky in there, especially if he gets getting finished. My question is, what would the UFC have to lose? Because at the end of the day, you put his name on a fight card. Fans who are fans of his or know him, they know him. They're most likely going to tune in. So he's still going to bring guys. What does UFC have to lose if they keep him on there? Granted, it's going to look bad for him, and for him, it'll be a personal health. But for the UFC, it seems like all they have to do is gain over here if Orlovsky can still draw in names and numbers.
Well, what do they have to lose is credibility. I mean, the UFC is known as the best promotion in the world, and if you keep putting older fighters in there who are slower and just really not – this is a young man's sport, right? And if you're putting guys in there like Andre Arlovsky who have clearly lost a step or two, then, you know, what is there to say about the UFC being the best promotion in the world with the best fighters when clearly you're putting guys in there that are past their prime and a little bit over the hill? I mean, no disrespect to Andre Arlovsky. He's a legend in his own right, but he's clearly past the point, and you know, now they're just trying to build names off of his name. So, like I said, they got to tread carefully and not really keep putting these guys in there for you know, for them to get knocked out or probably hurt.
Now, we say he's past his prime and they got to tread carefully. What happens if he gets a guillotine choke in the first round, finishes them off? What happens if he lands a quick left hook, knocks him down, and is able to get on him with ground and pound? What happens if he goes for an ankle lock? You know, he may not be, again, he may not be a future title contender, but can he beat the middle of the pack or bottom of the pack guys? Again, you know, Marcin is a young up-and-coming heavyweight, but if we start putting Arlovsky against maybe some of the older heavyweights, some of the younger guys, I mean, is there something to be – like, look at Vitor. Do you want to put him in there against the young guys, or would you rather see him fight the older middleweights, the guys like Lyoto Machidas when he come back, the guys who may not be top future title contenders but can still do something in the UFC? And that's one thing – I thought the UFC did wrong with Chuck Liddell. They were still trying to give him guys who still had title hopes contention in their future. Where he, now the Rich Franklin knockout was nasty, but I me, it just happened. I mean, he broke Rich Franklin's arm. He comes in, gets caught with a left hook. It's not like he was getting mollywopped in that one. But the Shogun fight, I didn't like that one. The Rashad fight, even though that knockout was brutal, I really didn't understand that one. I much rather would have seen him take on, again, Vitor Belfort in a rematch, Wanderlei Silva in a rematch, Quinn Jackson, maybe, but I would have rather seen him take on guys who are more middle and bottom of the pack as opposed to guys who are on upcoming. So, you know, for Orlovsky, I hear what you're saying, and I do agree that if he was to continue his career, especially if he went to Bellator, him and Chet Congo, Fedor, Matt Mitrione, possibly Rampage Jackson, there are a ton of matchups over there for him. I would just like to see the UFC do a better job with their older fighters and not always feed them to the young lions. It's good for the young lions, but then think about it. You make the old guys look bad, which isn't good, or you have the young guys get beat up, like we saw Yari Rodriguez against Frank Yeager, where now you stop the young guys' momentum, and what's good there? So I would definitely like to see the UFC do a better job with the matchmaking of their older fighters. Also on this card, we got Dong Young Kim taking on Colby Covington. Now, this is an interesting one because, to me, Kim is never going to be a title contender. I just don't see him being – but he's a tough guy. And Colby Covington, young, up-and-coming guy. I believe he's 4-5-1 in the UFC. Pretty good record so far. As I'm looking over his thing, 6-1 in the UFC, 3-fight winning streak. So – I think this is a good matchup right here, and especially for Covington. It gives him a chance to beat a credible opponent with a good name and to show that he could be a future contender in this division. How do you see Dong Young Kim and Colby Covington playing out?
Very exciting fight. Dong Young Kim, one of the wildest, craziest fighters in the UFC. I really love his fighting in the clinch. He's got really, really good takedowns, judo takedowns, and you know, one of the weirdest, craziest fighters that you'll ever see in your life. I mean, he just throws haymakers left and right, and he's got that weird, crazy South Korean spirit that, you know, that we've seen so many years in the UFC. So, yeah, I mean, really excited to see Dong Hyun Kim and Colby Covington. I mean, a really good up-and-coming prospect. Really like this fight. I mean, hey, what else can you ask for in a exciting welterweight division?
No, definitely. This is one of the fights to where, you know, it's not going to necessarily be the main event, and it's not going to be one that the winner gets the very next title shot, but it's one of those fights that potentially could be fight of the night, and it's a matchup where we can really see two guys who, you know, I don't know if they're heading opposite directions, but like I said, I don't think Dong Young Kim is ever going to be a title contender, but he is going to be a middle-of-the-pack guy that I won't say a gatekeeper, but he is going to be a guy that's going to be tough as nails there in the welterweight division. So this is a good one right here. Now, speaking of the welterweight division, making their debut in the welterweight division is former lightweight champion Rafael Dos Anjos. He's coming up to 170 now with the new divisions potentially coming out with the 165 division. I wonder if that's where he'll try to make his home at in the future. But RDA taking on Tarek Saffredin, another guy, probably would never be a title contender, but good gosh, is he going to be tough in the middle of that pack. Tarek Saffredin, RDA, how do you see this matchup playing out?
Another very exciting fight. Tarek Saffredin, the taller fighter, oddly enough, they both have the same reach, so I don't know that he's going to really try to use too much of his reach as an advantage. But yeah, RDA, I mean, coming off a couple of losses in the lightweight division against Eddie Alvarez and against Tony Ferguson. But he was looking really good against Tony Ferguson until the eye poke came in that fight. So, I mean, I'm not really call out RDA for, you know, for being on a down skid or anything like that. But, yeah, I like him better at 170. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this guys fighting in their natural weight. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see what RDA looks like at 170 and see if he can go for a title run at 170 against a very tough opponent in Tarek Saffredin, who was, by the way, coming off a loss against Dong Hyun Kim at UFC 207. So, yeah, this is going to be a really good fight. I mean, to me, probably the people's main event, because it's really, really a good fight.
Oh, excuse me. No, this is a really good matchup. Again, this is like the Dong Hyun Kim and Colby Covington one. This is two guys who are tough as nails. Tremendous matchup as far as skill set for Tarek Saffredin. He's 3-1 in his last four, So he's certainly one that needs to get a win here. For Rafael Dos Anjos, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how he looks physically and conditioning-wise at 170 because, you know, 155, it was such a dramatic weight cut for him to do, like we talked about with so many fighters in the sport of MMA trying to get down that far. And again, if they do the new divisions where 165 is introduced, I think that's where he might try to make his home at. But this one right here, it is going to be interesting because for, as I said, I think it was last week or the week last or the week before that, whenever you have somebody who's new in a division, I always think that you should give them a winnable opponent or a matchup where they're not necessarily taking on some. See, look, I don't want to make it sound like I want to give them just a set me up fight because the UFC, as you said, it's the best promotion in the world. There's no easy fights. But I do think that there are matchups where you can put them against somebody who's a lower level on the rankings list, and it could be someone who, hey, unless you come in here, you know, overthinking your opponent and not giving them the respect that they deserve, you should be able to get a win here. For Tarek Saffredine, though, even though he's on the skid, he's a tough-as-nails type of opponent. He's no easy win. So just as they said in Nutty Professor, you walk over, but you're limping back. So, well, will RDA's power and his wrestling translate to the welterweight division, or would he kind of just become another guy in that division now that he's taking on guys who are bigger and stronger than when he's used to at lightweight? This is going to be an interesting one, and it does start off the main card of the Fight Pass event here. So I'm very interested to see this one right here. I think Jung Young Kim and Kobe Covington is going to be the fight of the night, but we'll see. But RDA Saffredine, that's going to be one to check out right here. Being the main event of the prelim card, though, is somebody a little blast from the past. Takanori Gomi is taking on John Tuck, and no disrespect to Tuck, but I do have to pull him up. He is 32 years old. He is fighting out of Guam. He is 9-4, 5 submissions, 3 knockouts. So he is a finisher, but in the UFC hasn't fared so well. Since coming to the UFC in 2012, he is 3-4. He is riding a 2-fight winning streak, 1-3 in his last 4 fights. But for Gomi, the pride legend, so to speak, the fireball kid, we are looking at somebody with a 35-12 record, 3 straight losses, though. He's 1-4 in his last 5. And you want to talk about not having such a good record since coming to the UFC. When Gomi came in 2010, he has gone now 4-7 in the octagon. What do you think about Gomi? I mean, we were talking about Arlovski maybe needing to hang it up. Is it time for Gomi to hang it up? Or, hey, it's the Fireball Kid. Let's have some more.
Well, this is, you know, just another case of, you know, do or die for really both of these fighters. You know, Takanori Gomi, like you said, coming off a 3-fight skid. You know, what's he going to do if he loses to a John Tuck fighting out of Guam? You know, a guy who's really never stepped it up in the UFC. I mean, his best opponent is Norman Park, and he lost to Norman Park. So, yeah, I mean, maybe, will we see a vintage Takanori Gomi? That's what I'm really hoping to see. But like I said, I mean, it's a guy on a 3-fight skid. His back's against the wall, and it's a do-or-die fight for him. We'll see if that's a motivator for him and see if he can get some kind of a winning streak going and see if he can revitalize his career towards the end of it.
John Tuck is from Guam, but he's actually fighting out of Kings MMA. So he's getting some good training, not only with the coaches, but the training partners down there as well. He's training with RDA down there at Kings MMA. Cyborg used to train there. I don't think she trains there anymore, or at least she's just in and out. Hey, that's enough over there. Got my right-hand man over here, Alonzo over here, keeping guard while we're doing the show. What I'm very curious to see here is, will we ever see a Gomi versus BJ Penn fight in the UFC? I mean, that seems to be two legends against each other, two former top-of-their-game lightweights that need to go ahead and fight each other. We haven't seen it yet. Why not? If BJ Penn wants to still fight, Gomi wants to still fight, why not match these guys up? Now, I know BJ's fighting at 145. God only knows why he's still there. Gomi, Nick Diaz rematch. We saw him in Pride. It was a hellacious one. Unfortunately, Nick Diaz popped out for smoking the weed. But yeah, Gomi, you know, he's another one. You know, he's got the big names, he's got the fan base. He brings you over some the Asian fans, but unfortunately, he just hasn't been able to put it together like the UFC certainly was hoping when they brought him over. So this is going to be, I almost want to say, like a do or die. You know, if Gomi loses, Gilman's walking papers, like you said, no disrespect to John Tuck, but, you know, from where Gomi was to losing to John Tuck, where John Tuck is now, that's not a good look for him. Also, on the prelims card, we got really one of the best strikers, I believe, in the heavyweight division, Walt Harris, taking on Cyril Asker. I think this is going to be an interesting one because I like Walt Harris. He's, you know, he's 34 years old, not too seasoned, but he's 6'5". He's 9-5, but of his 9 wins, they're all knockouts. So if he wins, he's looking to go out there and finish you. Now, he did win his last fight earlier this year in January against Chase Sermon. He is 3-4 in the UFC. So, you know, it's been up and down for him. This is really a chance for him to not only build a 2-fight winning streak, his first in the UFC, but really get some momentum going forward here. Cyril Asker, damn, does he have a damn Wikipedia? That's not good, son. If you ain't got a Wikipedia page, I don't know if I could go for you there, Cyril. If you ain't got a Wikipedia page, he's got the name Cyril, and now I just can't thinking of Cyril from Archer, the TV show. I don't know if you watch it, but Cyril Figgis, that's what I'm thinking about when I see the name Cyril. So,
Mr. Cyril Diabate. Remember that name?
Oh, man, I tell you, Cyril, no disrespect, brother, but you're going to have to do something for us to remember you for your name as opposed to others who carry the same name. But what do you think about Walt Harris? We're talking about Francis Ngannou, Derek Lewis, who we'll get to shortly here. You know, some of these heavyweights trying to come up. What do you think about Walt Harris possibly trying to make a run in a heavyweight division starting with Cyril Asker?
I mean, like you said, all his wins are coming by some form of knockout. And, I mean, what more can you really ask for in a heavyweight division where – that's one of the wildest division in the UFC and in MMA in general, is that anybody can go down with a knockout, you know, anybody can go in there with a punch and change the story. So, you know, Walt Harris, good on him for fighting Mr. Cyril Asker and see if he can get some kind of a winning streak going in the UFC. And like that, he's one of the best divisions out there. So, you know, he's probably 1, 2, 3 wins away from knocking in the contender's door. So, yeah, a good heavyweight fight.
Now, indeed, we also got Bruce Leroy Saris on the card. We got Lee Jengalang. So we got Mr. Russell Doan on there, hopefully trying to represent for the 808 out there, keep the win streak going for the Island Boys. So this fight card right here, it's an interesting one. It is on Fight Pass, so take it for what it's worth, but it does have the potential of being a very good one indeed. Now, speaking of fight cards, the one that just passed from New Zealand, UFC fight named Mark Hunt versus Derek Lewis. Mark Hunt, the Super Samoan, tames the Black Beast, Derek Lewis, fourth round TKO finish here. What do you think? At 43 years old, Mark Hunt is defying Father Time by still going out there and showing, hey, he can still rock him and sock him with the best out there. What do you think of Mark Hunt getting his victory over a very rising star in Derek Lewis?
Yeah, Derek Lewis, you know, he was riding off a 6-fight win streak in the UFC. I mean, he was looking to possibly set himself up for a title shot. And we were talking about that last week, is that if you were to beat Mark Hunt, he's ready for a title shot. He's probably called for that next. And, you know, Mark Hunt put a stop to all that. So he looked really good. He was letting his hands go. And, you know, he was counterfighting Derek Lewis. And he took really the best punches and the best kicks out of Derek Lewis. I mean, Black Beast was, you know, throwing some really wild kicks out there in the first couple of rounds, and unfortunately he gassed himself out, but Mark Hunt was really winning all those exchanges anyway, so yeah, he was looking good, and he could possibly set himself up for a fight against Junior Dos Santos or something where he's, you know, climbing the ranks again for another title shot.
No, indeed. I was very – we talked about this going into it. We were very curious to see how – Derek Lewis' game plan will be against Mark Hunt. Will he try to just overwhelm him with a constant barrage of strikes and kind of wear on the gas tank of Mark Hunt? Will he try to stay away from the power, get in and out? Or would he just say, to hell with it, let's swing for the fences and see who lands the first home run? Obviously, he went the other direction, throwing those wild kicks. I mean, look, when JDS throws that spin kick against Mark Hunt and hits him on top of the dome, finishes him off,
Wow, great. When Cain Velasquez throws a spin kick against Travis Browning, knocks him down, finishes with grinding pound. Great. Chris Rydman, when Derek Lewis, when some of these other guys throw that spin kick and you miss and it doesn't work in your favor, you kind of scratch your head saying, what the hell were you thinking? Now, Derek Lewis did claim the reason he looked so bad, especially conditioning-wise, we saw at times during the fight, hands on the waist, backing up, taking deep breaths. He did say that it was from a back injury he suffered in 2011 and aggravated again, so he really couldn't get his conditioning work in throughout training camp. There was also a picture taken of him eating some ribs, apparently, before the fight. I mean, injuries happen all the time, so I'm not trying to take anything away. Do you think the injury, along with the baby back ribs, had anything to do with it? Or was just Mark Hunt just clearly the better man that night, regardless of the injury and the ribs?
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Mark Hunt, but like you said, there was a back injury lingering from Derek Lewis. There was also word of a foot injury. And, I mean, this is one of the most active fighters in the UFC heavyweight division. I mean, this guy's fighting 2-3 times a year, and he's having to cut weight, and they're always sending him to weird, crazy places to fight. I mean, he hasn't fought home in years. They're always sending him to Croatia or New Zealand, you know, all these crazy places. So, I mean, all of that stuff has got to take a toll on him. So, you know, and this is a guy that we talked about last week that he's really not a motivated type of fighter. He's just doing it for the money. He's really not, you know, trying to call out for a title or anything like that. He's not looking for a legacy. He's not looking for anything like that. He's just looking to get paid. And, you know, this past week, I mean, he was just met against a tougher opponent who basically took everything. I mean, Mark Hunt took Derek Lewis's best punches. He took his best kicks. And Hunt looked just absolutely incredible. So, you know, there was a bit of a chance that Derek Lewis might have retired in the octagon there. So, you know, did we see a really motivated Derek Lewis in there?
That is true. And that was also surprising. You figure he was on a, what, 5-6-5 win streak going into it. He wins, possibly the number one contender for a heavyweight title. He loses. Then all of a sudden, this could be his last fight. Now, I do get it. He is getting married, as you said, with the foot injury, the back injury. You know, maybe it's just taking a toll. The emotions were getting to him as far as that. Now, afterwards, he did talk about, you know, on social media, Francis Ngannou, Travis Browning tried to attack him, then he responded back to him. So it sounds like his retirement might be short-lived or short-thought. We'll see how it turns out for him going forward. During the finish, when Mark Hunt was finishing off Derek Lewis, if you notice, when Lewis was against the fence, he bent over. It looked like Mark Hunt hit him in the back one time, clearly with a straight elbow. And then right before the referee stopped in, either an elbow or like a forearm hammer fist to the back of the head. I'm sitting there saying, look, I get it, but why wasn't he called for that? Especially the one to the back, because that was clear. He put his hands on his head and clearly threw an elbow to the back. Now, I'm not going to say it was intentional. I won't say that about Mark Hunt, but he definitely should have been warned by the referee for that. But be that as it may, it is what it is. For Mark Hunt, though, getting his victory, showing that he's still active in the heavyweight division, still one of the toughest fighters out there, it's good for him because, you know, he lost his last one at 209 to Alistair Overeem. He lost, which was turned into a no contest against Brock Lesnar. So this is his first win since March of 2016 against Frank Mir. For Mark Hunt, you brought up Junior Dos Santos. Is that the next route? Get a rematch with JDS, try to avenge your loss, or is there another opponent out there you could see him possibly wanting to take on in the UFC heavyweight division? Because for someone like Mark Hunt, I want to tune in and watch him fight every time I know that he's on there, whether it's the main event, co, or middle of the card. Is there anybody that you see that might be a good opponent for Mark Hunt in the future outside of Junior Dos Santos?
Like I said, Junior Dos Santos is really the dream fight out there for him. But, you know, like we've mentioned Francis Ngannou a couple times today, and I mean, just another heavy-handed beast of a fighter. So, you know, there's always him out there for him. And Ngannou's kind of young in his UFC career, so it would be good to see him fight someone else before, you know, knocking for a title shot. So maybe Ngannou against Mark Hunt would be another fight out there for him.
That would be a good one, taking on two of the young prospects in the UFC heavyweight division, seeing if he could derail them and show them, hey, that old man strength's still with me. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out there. In the co-main event, Derek Brunson finishes off Dan Kelly, first-round KO with punches. Anything to take away from this other than Dan Kelly's a tough opponent? Just not quite that tough yet. What do you think?
Kelly, I mean, he's going in there with tape around his knees and tape around just every part of his body. If Derek Brunson loses to Dan Kelly, I mean, what does that really say about him? Derek Brunson's still a guy who can probably turn it back around and contend for a title, whereas Dan Kelly is probably on the tail end of his career. So, yeah, I mean, it's a very important win for Derek Brunson to keep it going and see if he can turn it around.
Yeah, for Brunson, you know, the Anderson Silva loss tripped him up much from there. I know he's been a little inconsistent, but he was riding some momentum, had that. I believe he might have lost shortly before that as well, but it's not like he was going on his major losing. He had more wins than losses, that's for sure. He lost to Robert Whittaker right before that, but then before, he had a 5-5 winning streak snapped by Whittaker, then by Silva, so it's not like he's that far away from fighting the elites in the division. This is a good win, and see, this is what I mean. You lose a Whittaker, you lose a Silva. There's no need to put him in there with Kelvin Gastelum or with Luke Rockhold or Jacare. Give him somebody who's towards the bottom of the pack. Let him kind of get that victory of showing. Are you still a top fighter that we can start getting you better matchups, or are you starting to slide and guys like Dan Kelly are being, you know, no disrespect to Dan Kelly, but he was coming there looking like he was just being held together by the tape that he was wearing. So, you know, it was a good test for Derek Brunson as far as going forward. His next matchup will be one to check out who the UFC pairs him with. Knockout of the night, maybe. Dan Hooker with a knee around the world on Ross Pearson. Good gosh almighty. What do you take away from Dan Hooker finishing off the veteran Ross Pearson? I mean, this guy, Hooker, 27 years old, 14-7, okay, but 7 knockouts, 6 submissions. And, you know, this was him bouncing back after losing to Jason Knight at the end of last year. What do you take away from Dan Hooker getting an impressive victory?
I think this was the arrival of Dan Hooker. I mean, he was really looking good against Ross Pearson, who was finding the left jab, finding the hook, and really countering against Hooker. And, I mean, it was a really fun fight. And Dan Hooker just timed it perfectly. He timed that knee perfectly because Ross Pearson was leading with his head a little bit every time he went in there for an uppercut or a hook. And, you know, like I said, Hooker timed it perfectly, knocked him out. Brutal knockout, probably one of the contenders for knockout of the year. And, I mean, what can you really say about Ross Pearson? I mean, he's been in the absolute trenches of the lightweight division. He tried his luck at 145 and didn't work out for him. And now he's really facing a 4 or 5 fight losing streak. And you know, what can you really do with Ross Pearson at this point, you know?
No, that's very true. Pearson has been in the UFC since 2009 when he won the Ultimate Fighter US versus UK, Cole Miller. And then from there, after that loss, Cole Miller, he really just went up and down, win against win, loss, win, loss, win, win. Then in the contest, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, loss. 4-fight losing streak, 1-5 in his last 6. So you look at it and say, how much more can Ross Pearson take? He's 9-14 overall. So he's a tough gamer, and he's somebody the UFC can rely on as far as being a veteran who they know is going to put on a good performance, and he's tough as nails. But, yeah, you got to wonder how much longer can he stick around in the division. With that knee knockout, you know, what's his recovery going to be like? Are we going to see him again before the end of the year? But, good gosh, man, that was a tremendous, tremendous showing by one Dan Hooker going forward. Now, excuse me. Now, some other news outside of the events that we just covered. Unfortunately, you know, with some sad news came about John Jones's mother, Mrs. Jones. She passes away in a tough bout with diabetes. It's a scary sickness and an illness, especially in the black community. DC, who John Jones is facing at the end of July, UFC 214, pays his respects to the Jones family. This close to the event, could this be a mental challenge that could derail Jones' comeback and attempt to get his crown back? Or could this be a pushing motivator to further get him that extra drive to beat DC once again and get his crown back? Which way you think this might sway Jones with the loss of his mother?
Well, first of all, condolences to the Jones family. I mean, it's really sad situation. You know, you don't want to hear about something like that. And, man, can John Jones catch a break? I mean, he hasn't really seen anything good happen to him in the last 3-4 years. And, I mean, just a really bad situation for him going so close to the fight against Daniel Cormier. I don't know how John Jones is going to take this. I mean, like I said, he hasn't really seen any sunlight in the last couple of years. So, I want to say that this is just going to be a motivating factor for Jones. Hopefully, you know, he's not going to be too rattled and just show, you know, the true John Jones that we know and love, and see if he can go in there and be a credible top guy like we've always seen him against Daniel Cormier.
Not certainly. And, you know, when you ever have a significant loss like this that touches so close to home, it's always tough on everybody around that's involved, especially for the athlete. Brett Favre lost his dad, but then he shows up against my Oakland Raiders, unfortunately, throws four touchdowns. For John Jones, you know, this could be one, like I said, it could be one that derails him mentally and really causes him to lose focus for the next couple of weeks in training, doesn't train as hard, isn't there 100% mentally, and that could be the deciding factor in if he doesn't defeat Daniel Cormier. Or it could be that extra motivation to go out there and try to win it for his mom and try to overcome all the hurdles, the loss of his mom, the DUI, the drug suspension, everything that's going on, as you said, for the past couple of years in his life, is just one more hurdle to get over. And it's a hurdle, and it's a very, very tough one. But John Jones, I mean, this could be a hell of a comeback story if he could come back from all this and still show he's the baddest man walking the planet. So condolences to the Jones family for their loss. Tremendous amount of class by DC. We know he doesn't like Jones personally, but this has got nothing to do with being a fighter or your distaste for one another. We all have parents, and we all know what it could be like when we lose them. So much respect to DC for showing some true class there. Speaking of showing some class, or speaking of class, period, one weight class, they're split on who to stand behind. Paying attention to social media, some of the UFC flyweight fighters in the 125-pound division, they support Demetrius Johnson's stand against the UFC. There are others who are kind of calling saying, hey, I'll fight TJ or I'll step in because if you're the best, you're supposed to fight the best regardless. Demetrius Johnson, supposedly the best pound-for-pound fighter, don't ask Dana White that because apparently to him it's Conor McGregor, given, you know, quote-unquote, what that really means. So what do you think about the UFC flyweight division kind of being split down the middle on fighters being either with or against DJ and his stance against the UFC right now? What do you take away from that?
I mean, we've been talking about fighters unions for the last couple of years, and this is one of the examples why I don't see a fighters union happening anytime soon, is because these fighters just really can't get behind each other. I mean, we have a prime example here of the UFC just kind of, you know, laying the hammer on one of their best fighters, a champion, and like you said, 50% of them are really not even on DJ's corner. And, you know, as far as the UFC talking about, you know, dismantling the division that's been there for 5 years, and now they're saying, no, we've been talking about this for the last 3 or 4 years with the division. So you're going to dismantle the division that's only been around for a year? I mean, this is clearly just a, you know, bullying tactics by the UFC to try to pressure DJ into a fight against the TJ Dillashaw. So, like I said, I mean, I don't understand the division with the fighters. I mean, they should really be backing each other up, but this is an individual sport and everybody's just really looking after themselves. So, I mean, it really shouldn't be surprising, right?
It really shouldn't be surprising. And you're right. You know, this is one of the struggles of trying to get a fighters union, which, you know, it makes sense on why this is such a struggle. They're all trying to get to the same spot, they're all trying to be the champion. They're all going against each other. There's feuds, there are personal differences, personal opinions on how they go about their business. Where you land on a DJ versus UFC controversy, if you want to call it that, you know, that's up to you. I get where DJ is coming from, but here's the thing. How can you call yourself the best? How can you say you're the baddest man around, but you're not willing to fight the best? The best are willing to come to you and say, hey, you didn't want to go to 135 and fight Dominic Cruz because he was too big for you. You didn't want to do that. But when there wasn't a 125-pound division, that's where you were. But you don't want to go back to that. Then when one of their former champions says, well, I come down to you, I didn't even give you my purse. Not like a Louis Vuitton purse, but, you know, his earnings if he doesn't make weight. You still say no. I mean, it's kind of hard for me to fully stand behind you on that one as far as you making that decision. We'll see how it plays out as far as who's going to back up first. For DJ, though, it's got to be him, given that he's a champion. He's trying to make history. Only way the UFC probably is going to let him is if he fights the guy they want him to fight. Now, whether that's TJ or somebody else emerges as far as, oh, okay, well, this guy makes sense. We'll see how it plays out going forward. Some other news, too. Take this with a grain of salt or take it with high praise. Bellator adds two new announcers to their team. Mike Goldberg, formerly of the UFC, and Mauro Ranallo, former voice of Pride, many, many, many other combat sports affiliations as well as professional wrestling. Everyone knows he came out with a bipolar issue that he's dealing with after his leave from WWE from apparent bullying situations there. Bellator now adding two voices of the Octagon that many fans are familiar with. What are your thoughts on Goldberg and Ranallo now being in Bellator?
I am absolutely heartbroken that Mauro Ranallo is not going to be going to the UFC because, like, I've been talking about this for the last couple of years, is that Mauro Ranallo, to me, is the best voice in combat sports. He would have been absolutely amazing in the UFC, but I'm happy to see him in Bellator. I mean, at least we get to see him in MMA and combat sports in general. Mike Goldberg, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of him. He hasn't been the most professional guy to call fights, but he's a very entertaining guy regardless. He's a guy whose voice everybody knows and we've all grown up hearing. So, yeah, I'm actually kind of excited to see him in Bellator, even though I'm not a huge fan of his. It's something familiar. And now we're seeing Bellator kind of build this nostalgia for MMA fans. I mean, we're seeing all these older guys in there, you know, like we're seeing kind of old Bellator feuds kind of brewing up there. And now we see Mike Goldberg and Mauro Ranallo are going to be calling these fights. So, hey, this is going to be fun. Now I really want to see Spike TV and Bellator.
No, certainly. Bellator is doing a good job, and not just bringing over fighters, but now you're bringing over announced team members to really add to that they're a legit promotion, that they really are the second best promotion in the U.S., in the States, in the MMA world, that they are one to be reckoned with. Mauro Ranallo has a very good voice, but I just want to give a take on what I feel about Ranallo and Goldberg going there. Are you ready? So, I'm telling you right now, Mauro Ranallo is the most overrated color commentator in all of combat sports, okay? Mike Goldberg, I won't count him because he makes too many mistakes. But Mauro Ranallo, to me, is highly overrated. Very good voice. Very good voice. But I've watched too many announcements from him where he gets way too excited over a jab or a leg kick, or he uses the same phrase over and over again. Granted, it's totally different. When he was in WWE, he used the term Mamma Mia way too damn much to where it got to, oh, that's cool, new and interesting, to, okay, dude, we got it. We got it. He's very knowledgeable of what he's talking about, but unless they're bringing over Boss Rudin as well, El Guapo, I'm like, okay, so who's going to pair with Ranallo where it's going to be that good tandem combination there? And that's another thing. Why the hell is it not taking Bellator so long to bring over Boss Rudin? What's wrong? Now, maybe it could be contract talks. Maybe he's got other interests and just has more time for it. Got it. But El Guapo, to me, seems like the most logical pairing to put Ranallo with. Because other than that, I don't know if I could stomach hearing a Mauro Ranallo commentating thing. But it is what it is. Bellator is making some news and some headways going forward. And with them having kickboxing, Ranallo could maybe even do some of the kickboxing calls for Bellator. That'll be interesting to see what he does. Plus, you know, he gets to use some of his same catchphrases over there and in the MMA cage as well. So, woo! That's about all I could think of right now as far as what's going on in MMA, man. I got to tell you, Mayweather-McGregor really was a punch in the gut and an uppercut to the jaw. It has hit a lot of people by surprise that it happened this quick, and it is going to be such a huge event. I wish it was more than 2 months to get ready for, but it is what it is. We are going to be seeing this historic matchup take place, and I mean, good gosh, man. Can you actually believe that not that long ago, nobody knew who Conor McGregor was? He had... he was a plumber apprentice, didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. And right now, not only is he one of the highest paid MMA fighters, he's about to be literally one of the highest paid combat fighters in all of the world. And it's only been a couple of years since his rise to fame. You want to talk about a success story, a motivational story, an inspiring story for the youth, for everyone to look at? Conor McGregor, that's pretty hard to beat, man.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, just a few years ago, he was making his UFC debut, calling Dana White for $50,000 for fight of the night, or knockout of the night, rather. And now he's fighting for millions and millions of dollars against the best boxer of our generation. So, you know, this is a really good story. I can't wait to see what the hype is going to be all about, and I can't wait to see how they're going to build this fight. You know, I mean, it's only 2 short months away. So, hey, this is going to be Mayweather and McGregor, two of the best trash talkers in the game.
Two of the best talkers in the game, champion versus champion, money versus money, the guy who loves money in boxing, guy who loves money in MMA, two combat warriors at heart. Here's an interesting one. We're going to dive into this more as the fight gets closer. We know that McGregor has such a huge fan base across the globe. Everyone loves him. Great story. He inspires everyone. We know Mayweather isn't the most popular fighter outside of the black community here in the States. But he did fight for the U.S. Olympic team in 96. He's taking on the Irishman, Irish people, got that complexion. Do you see USA getting behind Mayweather, or are we going to see boxing fans get behind McGregor simply because it's Mayweather and they can't stand him? What do you think?
No, I think we're going to see the boxing fans go for the boxer, and we're going to see the MMA fans go for the MMA guy, and that's just how it is. I mean, Americans aren't really that type of fan base where they go for the American regardless. I think they always want to go for the guy who captures their imagination. They want to go for the guy who's probably the best up until he gets to that point where he's too good, and then they just want to root for his demise. You know, I think Mayweather might be there already. I don't know that McGregor's there, but I'm fully expecting the MMA fans to be rooting for McGregor and the boxing fans to be rooting for Mayweather.
Mayweather's obviously been there for a long time. McGregor's there with MMA fans. I feel a lot of them do want to see him go down just because they don't like how he's ascended up the ranks so quickly. But this is going to be interesting. The buildup is going to be crazy, and we'll be here covering every week. Every week, Wednesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Tune in right here to Inside the Octagon. This show is brought to you by the Sports Grid Podcast, which you guys can tune into every Thursday evening between 6 and 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to Facebook, go to All Things Sports, give it a like and a follow. Check out all the content they got there. Follow me on Twitter at KLU11. Follow Leo at
Shower Leo. And Black Beast up in this hoe. Don't retire, Derek Lewis. You got a lot more to give.
Yeah, Derek, you got too much to do. But follow us on Twitter, All Things Sports on Facebook. Until next week, everybody, peace.